This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hey folks, it is Dr. Holly Lucille. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to be talking today about how your doctor is actually influencing your buying decisions. Now, a big thing about my show, Mindful Medicine, is truly through all the somewhat seductive messaging of the medical industry and marketing of even the wellness industry, it can be overwhelming, and you can kind of fall asleep at the wheel and not use your own mind. And then, you know, you're sort of just getting, seduced. I've always wanted to save the seducible from the seductive. And I've got somebody who's going to help me with this conversation. Vince Perry is a 30-year veteran of the health and wellness communications industry. He's also the founder of Perry Branding Group. So throughout his distinguished career, he's worked on many of the most well-known corporate franchise, service, and product brands. And so Vince, you know, whether a doctor or a patient, it is extremely important to know how healthcare marketing and branding positions the products and medications we use commonly. And so you've got this book, right? This new book, Identity Crisis, Healthcare Branding, Hidden Problems, and Proven Strategies to Solve Them. I can't wait to start this conversation. So let's go. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, doctor, for having me.
Yeah. So, obviously we're inundated. I sometimes, and usually it's when I'm traveling, I'll have sort of the TV on in the background just to kind of give me a little bit of comfort or sort of white noise. I notice that I do that. I don't have TV on much when I'm home, but I just shake my head sometimes at the direct-to-consumer marketing, certainly from the pharmaceutical industry. It's unbelievable to me. But I'm interested, why do you feel that healthcare branding world is sort of in an identity crisis?
Well, the primary reason is because a lot of marketers and agencies in my business tend to use a consumer branding model when promoting healthcare brands. And that creates an identity crisis because the way that healthcare brands are consumed and sold is very, very different than the way consumer goods are sold. Consumer goods are a celebration of the buying process. Hey, I got a new iPhone. I got a new Dior bag. I bought a new BMW. Not to plug those products. Whereas the healthcare, right. Healthcare brands are not a celebration of self. They're a protection of self. If you've got any number of conditions, whether acute or chronic, such as psoriasis or multiple sclerosis or irritable bowel syndrome, some of the ones that are currently promoting on TV today, use a consumer branding model. And, you know, they have things like about how people love their laxative, or they'll have little mascots running around like the Jolly Green Giant or whatever. But in this case, they're sort of like a mucus monster, or your lower intestines come to life in human form, running around. And it's an incongruous juxtaposition between trying to celebrate the idea of healthcare relief with the real way that people want relief, which is discreetly, responsibly, and professionally. So, yeah, I also laugh out loud a lot of times at watching the consumer branding model create an identity crisis, not only for healthcare products and services, but also for the very patients who are seeking more serious kinds of relief.
Yeah. So this is an interesting question, and I hope, what's the difference truly between branding? Because we hear about that a lot these days. Everybody sort of, you know, brand storytelling, their branding and marketing. What's the difference between the two?
That's a great question. So, and I think one of the reasons is, and I say in my book, that branding is poorly branded. It's come to sort of represent a ubiquitous term. It sort of means almost everything to everybody, which is why I title my book Identity Crisis, because when you talk about identity, then people begin to see a difference between brand identity and marketing or communication or advertising. So brand identity is the fundamental idea of what a brand stands for in people's minds, whereas advertising or marketing is creating messages that get people's attention, that make you want to learn more about a brand. They're sort of very brand focused, whereas a branding identity is very consumer focused, very audience focused. So, for example, if you watch a Cialis commercial, the messages may be about the product itself, and how long it works, how well it works, how many people might be using it, etc. And then visuals to show how, you know, a couple sort of engage with each other. But what the brand essentially stands for, Cialis, and it's a brand I've worked on, so I know this from an internal standpoint. In fact, most of the examples I use in my book I have worked on directly, so it's sort of been in the trenches view. The brand is about restoring intimacy in a relationship. It isn't about sex, and it isn't about the product itself. The brand identity for Cialis is intimacy restored, because as you see from some of the commercials, they're not selling sex. They're really selling the idea of you've already got a relationship. Let this brand help you enjoy that relationship and continue it in a way that's most desirable to you, and do it in a way that's discreet and shared between you and your partner. The same thing is true with a product like Lipitor that I worked on. Now, the advertising and the marketing will talk about how it lowers cholesterol and it helps prevent heart attacks and cardiovascular disease. But essentially what the brand stands for is cheating insurance. Lipitor is a very strong lipid-lowering agent. And some people question why you need such a strong agent. And the brand stands for the fact that, let's face it, customers don't tell the truth. They don't go on a low-fat diet. They don't exercise in the gym three times a week. They take Lipitor and say, you know what, as long as I lie to my doctor and the lipid levels are down, who's the we the wiser? So Lipitor in the minds of customers is cheating insurance. I can eat this hamburger because I've got Lipitor on board. So it's the difference between a brand identity that's the fundamental essence of how a brand is positioned in one's mind versus the messages that get your attention and want to ask more information about it.
Got it. So, all right, well, let's break this apart then. So when we're talking about, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and these different brands, and then the doctors seeing patients, what role do you think the doctors play in terms of marketing when it comes to these agents?
Well, that's another great question, and it's a little bit of a complicated question, so let me take it apart for a second. So we do market to doctors as well. In fact, that's something that goes unseen by the average patient or consumer. Most of the information that physicians get once they get out of medical school, most of the information they get about drugs is from drug manufacturers. They're the number one source of information for physicians. And that information comes in a variety of ways. It comes clinically with papers that are talking about the clinical studies done by the manufacturers. And then there's marketing. They actually get ads done to themselves. They get they read their journals, their New England Journal of Medicine or the American Journal of Cardiology or any one of the medical journals. They read it in there, are advertising, just like a consumer would see going through People magazine or whatever. So what we're trying to tell doctors is very different than what we're trying to tell patients. And we're trying to build the brand image in such a way that a doctor can see a flattering reflection of their own brand of practice in the medicine. Now, so when doctors don't actually use the brands, although they may if they have that particular condition, but the marketing we do physicians is to help them say, if you consider yourself an intelligent avant-garde doctor, then this brand would be the more progressive brand for you, because if you're treating progressively and you're trying new things, this would be the brand for you. Or if it's another brand where maybe they're more conservative as a type of physician, and we may promote a brand identity that's more about the idea of trusted and dependable. So we're trying to create a brand identity around products that help physicians make choices about how to put forth their own personal brand of care in taking care of patients. So another way to answer the question is that you want doctors to be prepared, because when patients are seeing communications in their on their TV screen or in their magazines, the last thing you want is for a patient to walk into a doctor's office and say, hey, I just saw this commercial on TV, and all of a sudden they're telling me to ask you about Harvoni, this new hepatitis C medication. What's going on with that? Well, if the doctor hasn't been privy to what was going to be shown to the patient ahead of time, the doctor's going to be awfully angry and feel very stupid and uninformed, and have a grudge against the pharmaceutical company or the healthcare manufacturer for not priming them to the fact that they're going to get people walking in and asking about this. So the idea is to create a push-pull environment that's already well-established for both parties. the physician is being made aware of a marketing story that's being told to patients and expect people to come in and talk about it. And the patient right. now, when they come in, are ready to have a conversation about it because the doctor's ready to have a conversation about it. So doctors usually prescribe what they want to prescribe because based on their their habits and the success rates that they see and what they trust and what their colleagues are telling them is successful for them. And they get into a dialogue with patients. Sometimes the drug is right for a patient and sometimes it's not. And that's the big difference in healthcare branding to consumer goods branding is that you can tell a patient all you want, but it comes down to that dialogue between the doctor and the patient, which is that safeguard to make sure that whatever the patient hears on TV is not the only thing that he or she is going to hear about this particular medication.
Yeah. So, what's your conversation to the patient? Should they be cautious about then what a doctor is recommending? How can they be most prepared to not sort of get swindled or seduced by just that, you know, the whole thing that you're talking about, where, you know, the doctors are marketed and the brands, you know, market to physicians and then they go just right to the patients. What do you tell patients?
Another great question. So, probably the worst place to get information from about drugs is on a TV commercial, and it's just the nature of the medium. You have about 30 seconds to tell what is essentially an incredibly complex story about a disease state and about a potential help for a disease state. And as I said earlier in our talk, a lot of this is real sugar-coated, optimistic a celebration fallacy about people who are really happy about their brands. They're not. And so the best way to do this is I tell patients that the best thing you can do is probably either talk to your doctor about it or go online to a reputable third-party source. So, for example, a reputable third-party source might be, let's say, WebMD as a third-party information site or MayoClinic.com, another good third-party source. And they really give very objective information about the different brands, about the things that you don't hear about on the TV commercials. And they lay out comparisons between that drug and other drugs. And another sort of way to find out information is to talk to other people who have had it. So by going to societies, usually most illnesses have advocacy groups and societies that support you. So like, you know, the American Heart Association or the National Cancer Institute and organizations that are in the business of putting together real-world stories about people who have illnesses and people who had experience with medications so that other people can learn from this type of community dialogue. Those are the best ways to find that information by independent third party. Now, this answer isn't making me any more endeared to my clients in pharmaceuticals, but
yes.
I get paid to tell the truth, whether it's welcome or not, because, you know, healthcare is a long-term game when you talk about reputation. It's not a short-term game.
Sure.
People are really being treated over a long period of time, and they need to know what's what. And the pharmaceutical companies, while they say, you know, the TV commercials are necessary, I push back and say they're necessary, but they shouldn't be the only way that patients find out about your technological innovations.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the point of my show sometimes is honestly just to kind of, you know, sure, I understand marketing, understand branding to a certain extent and that it's needed and but really then being able to support the consumer and the customer, the potential patient, by thinking things through, taking responsibility. I mean, we've got things coming at us all the time. So just taking responsibility and not just saying, oh, okay, well, my doctor just, you know, told me to take that, so I'm going to take it. Have some responsibility for what you actually put in your body. Now, this question, this is about condition. You call it condition branding. I call it disease mongering, but this is a term that you actually coined that refers to creating diseases and or a disorder that is based on a group of symptoms. Can we talk a little bit about this?
Absolutely, yes. Condition branding can be both disease mongering and a tremendous boon to society, depending on whether it's done badly or done well. So it can be both, really.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know, I've seen it over and over again, and it kind of like, what do you think about it? I mean, is it, you know, how does it work? I mean, can you provide an example when condition branding can help a patient, or is it really just a ploy by the pharmaceutical companies to scare people into buying more drugs? Because I've seen it, and I feel like, oh, that's kind of creative. You create a market. Sometimes out of a normal condition. I mean, menopause was probably the biggest disease-mongering ploy ever. They created a market out of a natural phase a woman goes through. Now, I'm not saying that there's not symptoms associated with menopause, especially in our modern day, but talk to me more about that.
Yeah, and that the menopause is an example of what I don't think it's been done well. So you and I are in agreement on that particular example. So let me address your question on when it is done well. Now, let's face it, people are going through symptoms, and unless it has a name, unless it has a brand name to it that everyone could agree upon, and a name that is illuminating in some way and that takes away the stigma of the condition and illuminates the condition as something worthy of discussion and treatment and research, then it's a very, very good boon to society as a whole. So, for example, I was involved very early on with GlaxoSmithKline. They had their drug Zantac that is used as the H2 antagonist, and it's used for the treatment of what used to be called heartburn. And heartburn is a very colloquial kind of illness. You almost joke about it. You think about the old Alka-Seltzer commercials that used to talk about, you know, acid in your stomach after you eat pizza or too much pepperoni or Mexican food or something. And it really underplayed the tremendous damage that was being done when the esophageal sphincter was relaxing and acid was washing up into the esophagus, causing hospitalizations, causing people to overuse over-the-counter medications like Tums or Rolaids that were ineffective for long-term acid reflux, and even esophageal cancer. So there was a tremendous amount of morbidity and mortality associated with this. Well, it turns out that there is a kind of heartburn that's chronic, but we renamed it gastroesophageal reflux disorder, or GERD, G-E-R-D. And the reason we did this was because it was a form of chronic heartburn that resulted in physical pathological changes. And once that became aware, people began to say, you know, this isn't a joke anymore. It isn't just the food I'm eating. I have an abnormality. I have the sphincter of my esophagus is weakened to the point where my own body is beginning to harm itself by not doing its job well. And so by using products like Zantac and like other proton pump inhibitors these days, you're able to resolve that. And by creating a term, gastroesophageal reflux disorder, it makes it sound medical. It makes it sound much more critical and worthy of going to see a doctor rather than just going and buying a package of Tums or something. So it was intentionally medically complex as a name, as opposed to heartburn, which just sounds like, you know, something that your grandfather got occasionally on after Sunday dinner or something like that. And then the acronym GERD, G-E-R-D, was intentional as well because we don't expect patients and the general public to remember gastroesophageal reflux disorder. We expect them to know GERD as a moniker. And so that's the way it was done. It was done very intentionally. And it isn't done just by Glaxo. It was done by pulling together a lot of thought leaders, independent physicians who write papers and do academic studies, by the societies themselves, and by a great number of people that all have an agenda in popularizing the importance of this condition and the deleterious nature of what the condition can do if left untreated. So disease branding or condition branding isn't something that's always owned by a pharmaceutical company. It has to be accepted by the population in general as a sound medical practice in order to have uptake. So that's an example of when it's done well.
Yeah, I see it. I see, you know, with the PMDD, you know, of course we've heard of PMS, but then there's the the PMDD. They've taken it one step further. And when people start to identify themselves in this new category of symptoms and there's a treatment for it, then it becomes a little appealing for them. So listen, it's fascinating. I love how you've taken sort of the work that you've done, but also, you know, wanted to think about it a little bit more. So folks, once again, identity crisis, healthcare branding's hidden problems and proven strategies to solve them. Basically, this lovely author, Vince Perry, discusses how pharmaceutical companies brand products, how this branding guides the decision that doctors make for their patients, and how you, my listeners, the patients, can become more informed about the medications they are recommending. It's all about waking up and using your own mind. So, Vince, I want to thank you so much once again. People can find you where they can find you at your Perry Branding Group. Okay, that's perrybrandinggroup.com. Thanks so much, folks. This is Dr. Holly Lucille on Mindful Medicine. Go ahead and go to iTunes. You can rate this podcast and we can grow our community and keep the conversation going. Thanks so much.